This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Welcome Wednesday night, Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Wednesday night, educators amplified in the house.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny, there they are. Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie, back in doing some, you know, radio talking about things that are happening. Hey, speaking of, though, how are you? We haven't seen you since last week. Teacher Hallie, Teacher Joanna, what's going on in your worlds? Uh-oh, not Joanna.
Got a little silence there, but okay, what is going on? I've been extremely busy. We are now in, you know, it's after spring break. So in school world, now it's like rush and get everything done that we said we were going to get done. I'm feeling that. I'm feeling the rush, but very appreciative for the bit of energy I'm feeling with the longer days in terms of light.
Nice. Yeah, it does feel good, huh?
Not longer work days, the ability to see outside through the windows at dinner time. And it's not dark, Teacher Hallie.
Oh, I'm coming off just right now off a phone call with, I'm the president of a local union. And so they're in the works of negotiations, right, for salary and stuff. And so it's just interesting to hear, you know, the thoughts of working with district administration, the teacher perspective, and then the sadness and like this teacher was like, we've never received cost of living increase since Act 10. So since 2011, they haven't received a cost of living salary increase, you know? And so you just kind of sit in like, wow, you know? And so, right. People are fighting the good fight out here. And I'm happy to
no cost of living increase. And that's over 10 years now since Act 10. And and today we get the report that inflation is back up again. Oh, man. I know. Though, Teacher Joanne, I was wondering, though, when that kind of potential rush, because knowing this, the season that we're coming into or we're in, say, after spring break, kind of there's this sense, isn't this the kind of like, uh-oh. You know, this is where the rubber starts to meet the road here, teachers and kids, man, because we got lots and lots of testing to do. And is this starting for you guys?
Yeah, I was. You know what?
I'm sorry to bring you down.
No,
I bring you down.
It's the truth, and that's where we're at. Yeah, we're in testing season, and so. Even I think it was last week was the first week back after break here. And I'm going to tell you, pre-COVID, coming back from break, it was usually kind of quiet the first couple days coming back from break. Like the kids were still kind of tired because they stay up late over break. And you could have counted on it to be kind of, again, low key. Post-COVID, that is no longer the truth. They come back cranked up and then go right into testing. And so it's kind of both. It's like, I don't know, the years feel different, but then I was in a school the other day where kids were just kind of, it did seem kind of like wandering a bit. And then they kept coming into this office where I was meeting with the administrator being like, you know, is it still second hour? And everyone was literally confused because it was a testing day. And you're like, only certain groups of the kids are testing, but it impacts the schedule of the whole school. And so, you know, then there's where my compassion comes in of like, you know, it's hard. Like it is really important to have a, think about with your own children. It's important to have like a predictable routine. And so, yeah, it is testing season and that throws it off.
Let me frame testing season then a little bit differently as we're coming in for the topic tonight. You all have nothing to worry about right now because nothing's going to change because here we are 40 years now after A Nation at Risk, our friend Robert Pondicio in the 74 putting out there, you know what, you teachers and the kids, it's not going to make a darn bit of difference because everything we've been doing up to this time has failed miserably, of which I do agree with him on. And we shouldn't get our expectations up too high right now, because the reality is that he and the people who have been loving A Nation at Risk for 40 years have finally come to the realization that all along they should have been focused on curriculum, high quality instructional materials. If they would have just focused 40 years of effort at changing the curriculum, because teachers, you guys just shouldn't be responsible for producing curriculum and teaching materials, because it's obvious that the teaching materials and the curriculum that you guys have been producing over 40 years hasn't done anything. And as we know now during testing week, criticism here, though, 40 years after A Nation at Risk, could curriculum reform finally move the needle on academic improvement? That's the premise. That's the paper. Teacher Hallie, I can see tears dropping down your cheeks. You know, Joanna is grabbing a hold. And look at that right away, too, man. We haven't even got into this. Jim, we got a caller already. Jim from Appleton. All right, Jim, we're going to let you jump in here. I know you're sitting there going like, I want me some high quality instructional materials. Thank you, Busted Pencils, for bringing this up. Jim, what's happening?
Well, as a school bus driver, I can really relate to Yeah, they're nuts the date coming off from spring break. But what I really wanted to hit you on was the inflation is up. No. Inflation isn't up. The stock dividends are up for all of the stockholders, because the corporations made record profits again.
Nice perspective there. Thank you for that shift and that smack upside my head, because I needed it, obviously, to be out there. Johnny's got that look like, yeah, Tim did need a smack, and if I could have reached through the screen, I would have hit him.
Tim, I'm picking up what you're laying down. But first, man, Jim, thanks for driving the bus, man.
Yeah,
that's important work. I mean, we can't do any of this stuff we're talking about without all the folks that come together to make public education and education possible. So love what you do, Jim, and thanks for it. And yeah, man, the kids aren't coming back from break sedated at all. There was, you know, a lot of energy coming out of the gates this week. So, you know, and Tim, I'm following what you're laying down. But
okay,
man,
yeah, I was just gonna say, put it out there, right?
No more high quality instructional materials. Great. Sounds awesome, but it's not true. It's usually because that whole report, and I'm sorry, Tim. I got a little snoozed off during it because I was like, man, I'm so many years into hearing here's the best quality instructional materials. And I look at it and it's like maybe a different color cover on the book that's really expensive and not what I need in my classroom.
Mm.
Not what I need as a teacher to do my job better. I know this stuff. I have things that I need. It's like a wish list, and none of it comes through that high quality instructional material stuff that you're talking about. And I'm not saying you're talking about, you're reading about.
I'm reading about it. I want to read a little bit here, and then we're going to jump in with Teacher Hallie and quote. This is right out of the middle of the article. There is one arrow in the policymaker's quiver. Sounds to me like he had AI write that. In the quiver that remains mostly unutilized and can be used to affect positive change: curriculum reform, the adoption and implementation of high quality instructional materials. That would be HQIMs. And making curriculum and its implementation central to school improvement efforts contribute to working conditions that allow teachers to focus on lesson delivery, not design. Because we know you teachers who went to school for years to become professionals in curriculum instruction, you don't really have the expertise to be messing around with curriculum. Leave that to the professionals who produce HQIMs, high quality instructional materials. Johnny, I will say, in all my years of preparing teachers, I feel like I've let them down, because I never once introduced my future teachers to high quality instructional materials. Teacher Hallie, I'm sorry if I steered you the wrong way when you were becoming a teacher.
I'll be honest. I read this and I was like, what is this gobbledygook? Like, I mean, on one hand, it's tough. It was hard to read. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, my biggest thing reading it was, okay, if I try to think about if someone was reading this, would they be like, oh, this makes sense? Mm-hmm. But then I was like, then I know if you think it makes sense, you've never been in a classroom before. You've never taught, you know, because as I'm reading it, I'm like, this is what we do. And I'm also like, curriculum is not the problem. You know, like, I don't know. It really was an awful article. And it's concerning for me to think that people believe it.
It's concerning, and I'd say this, because actually this carries a lot of weight in the reform movement. This is, you know, their inability to let go of what they started 40 years ago. I mean, here it is. This is counterattack again, high-quality instructional materials, and this is the bad teacher narrative. But, you know, hey, look, wait, how can you argue with, he quotes a research that says comprehensive, content-rich curriculum is a common feature of academically high-performing countries. You know, so in those countries where they do good testing, they have high quality instructional materials, Teacher Joanna.
Well, that, when you were reading the initial piece, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, oh my gosh, I know we want to talk about this maybe for the show, but I'm like, this is quick, because it's like, they just need instructional materials to match their guaranteed testing contracts. That's all it was saying. That's all it was saying, is like, we've got the market on, we've got the testing contracts. Now we need the curriculum, and I'm doing the air quotes, to match up with it, to really, you know, and it has nothing to do with teaching or learning, and everything to do with marketing and sales.
There it is. I was going to say, Tim, you use the sarcasm, so I have to follow, because I don't always like the sarcasm. But then I was like, oh yeah, Tim's using sarcasm. That's that thing. But I was saying, because Tim, otherwise, man, I just, like, three lines in, I was like, I was waiting for the line that says, and I have a timeshare in Vegas for you to buy and swamp land. And like, as a teacher, like, you read these things and we're like, okay, what are you selling? And probably my superintendent or principal's buying it. So let me just get to the point of like, where it's at. It's not what we need. It's not what we want, but it's a long-winded sales ad. It's like the weird drug commercials that come on during
before my break, for all of us, yes, the sale, this sounds like selling us bad condos. For my neighbor, wait, oh, this sounds like the solution. I want to poke some more holes, though. 40 years, nation at risk. My goodness, they will not go away. Education reformers. Look, if you're a reformer, give us a call. Busted Pencils, back after the break. Yeah, there it is. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Educators Amplified, Wednesday night in the house. Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie, you can jump in too, 855-752-4842. And we do have caller Mark from the SAC is on the line. Mark, what's happening, our friend?
Interesting conversation today, and talk about, you know, what we need to do, you know, for education. I mean, but I can remember back when I was in, I think it was eighth grade, we read Great Expectations in class, that, and the lessons learned there is that, you know, young boy is staying, you know, his mother has died, and he's staying with an aunt that really doesn't care about him, but a caring blacksmith, you know, stepfather that's taking care of him, Joe Gargery, and he meets an old convict, and he helps, you know, he generously provides that old convict with food, and it gives him his, you know, his legacy, you know, later on in the story. And then moving on to 11th grade, I can remember reading Julius Caesar. I mean, there's the political lessons, there's the power of oration, and both of those things, you know, one was, you know, 150 years old when I read it, and the other is 400 years old when we read that, you know, that play Julius Caesar, by Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that could be, you know, that maybe that's too dated to work in today's curriculum, but I think with a little imagination that you can work that in and learn important lessons, because nothing in politics has really changed, you know, that it's just a different cast of characters, and that people have been practicing politics for a couple of, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 years. And yeah. I mean that, and you see the same tactics from back then as today, and that that it's just the characters have changed, and you know maybe some of the technology, but
You know what, Mark? Yeah, I was just thinking, you know, as you talk about this, you know, would those books can be counted as high quality instructional materials today? Teacher Joanna, you've got to kind of look.
Not in its entirety. Remember, okay. Reading now is in pieces and not in its entirety. But I, too, read Great Expectations and loved it.
Oh, yeah. I was a Charles Dickens man myself. You know, I think I told a favorite author, but my junior year in high school, my English teacher who was teaching us to write research papers said, well, if you pick him, I think he's horrible and you're not going to get more than a C. And I thought he was joking. And guess what? I got on my term paper. C. Didn't make me not like Charles Dickens, though. Made me not like that teacher because, well, you know, what was happening was the schooling. I don't know, Mark, thank you so much for the call. Always enjoy
when you're
participating. Yeah, always participating. But, you know, the high quality, Joanna, you made a great point there saying, like, not today, because the whole idea of a book length is just things we don't do. And this, you know, kind of thinking about this push here, too. Remember, this push is all about academic achievement as if academic achievement is the main, only, solely purpose of Johnny Lupinacci schooling. Well, yeah. And you know what I would say? In a schooling world, Johnny, they're right. It is the only.
In a schooling world, Tim, we're reading that article you sent us.
Didn't go.
And I'm not reading that. I read like three lines and I'm listening. I love you. And I love like the patience teacher Joanna and teacher Hallie have because they keep saying it. Guys, we need to do it differently. We need to just put it to the side and do what, like read the room, read the energy of the children or what their needs are or what our body needs are, right? I remember teacher Hallie and teacher Joanna gave us that diagram about, you know, the domains. And I kept thinking about them with our guests last week, Tim. We had Martin Atkins, punk legend, talking about post-punk and saying, you know, education to him is punk because punk went against the grain and said, stop controlling what we're doing and telling us we have to do it this way. Mm-hmm. We're going to sound a way, feel a way, and share. And it's raw from what we're thinking, what we're believing, and what we want to share. And I kept thinking, this is like Ed Amplified on Wednesdays always talks to us about like teaching, like how Martin talked about being post-punk. You know, so teacher Joanna and teacher Hallie, like shifting gears to him, because we do have to talk about that important stuff. But I'm like, TLDR, it's another acronym for you. FOMO, Tim learned FOMO last week.
So okay.
Now we're on TLDR, Tim.
Yeah, I don't know that one.
You will at the end of the show. But anyways, it'll be a surprise for you. But then getting to it, like we trudge through that stuff. But then I just want to be like reminded that teaching can be so different, and like the art of it, the craft of it, the being present at the moment of sharing and learning in classrooms, and the energy that young people have to make the world a different place and being part of that. I remember teacher Joanna saying, you just want to teach, like, God, like,
but I have two experiences that I'm thinking of just from this week that can maybe lay this out. One was the eclipse. That right? Kids can like learn about the eclipse.
I'm not sure
that
was part of the high quality instructional materials for the
week.
Well,
right. But then going out with the glasses and seeing it, you know, to me it was just that it's palpable, right? About how like it's different on paper versus experience, and how kids are experiential. And that, you know, that's how they learn is by doing. And so, right, back to that article, that just, you know, relegates high quality curriculum to worksheets. It's worksheets on a screen. And that's a place, but it's certainly not the center of instruction. It certainly isn't like what, you know, it's much more the how than the what. And so, yeah, the eclipse this week really was like, I just remember feeling that because I was having just such a great time being surrounded by a bunch of middle schoolers who were in it. It was just so cool.
But no, so Hallie, I'll at least go to my good student who did do the reading here and go, okay, in case I'm not advocating, just so make sure everybody knows, I'm not advocating the point, but what concerns me is with the vigor of which this author just puts forward the argument of saying, Teacher Hallie, Teacher Joanna, look, you don't have the time, you don't have the expertise, you don't have the knowledge to be out there trying to create curriculum. Okay, great, you took advantage of the eclipse, but you know what did you do? Go and find something on Google about how to do it? That's low quality stuff. You should have your time better spent being given the appropriate materials so you can teach. And Hallie, it was offensive to me because I could see in this case, he literally, I mean, it was not even hidden. Like, look, teachers are largely going to be mediocre to not very good people. And because of that, we need to give them high quality materials because the quality of who they are is always going to be crappy. That was offensive.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I mean, this was anti-teacher, this entire article. So I'm like, I can't believe Tim sent this for me to read. Like, does he want me to be like depressed all day? No, I was fine. But I'll tell you just one thing. As your best student sitting here, what I did is I looked up, you know, who is this resource? So I critiqued the source and immediately saw like, oh, this is like supported by like the Walton family and whatever. Mm. But then you know what else I did? I put it in, and Walton family's not good. So right away, I knew like, this is going to be BS. But then I put it into ChatGPT and put summarize.
Wait a minute. Okay, more busted pencils. Teacher.
10 seconds.
I tell you, there are 11 mothers, or if not more, crying tonight as they're listening to this. It's Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. 855-752-4842. If you're on any of the live feeds, yes, I know you guys just had some fun with us back there during the break, you know, doing some talking about some things. Oh, hey, you know, if you're listening on the radio and you're driving in your car, please keep your eyes on the road. Don't try to find our Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter feed. But that was a lot of fun. You know what, though? Here we are again. And you said high-quality instructional materials. This reminds me, though, too, Teacher Hallie, Teacher Joanna, you know, about a year ago, we came together as Busted Pencils Educators Amplified and actually recorded a very long podcast about really addressing this issue of high quality instructional materials. I think that was probably one of the first, you know, origin moments of Busted Pencils Educators Amplified getting together to do a co-collaboration creation here. So, you know, I was kind of like wanting to just go back and relive some old memories of this. But Joanna and Hallie, I'm frightened by this because if we don't have a vigorous critique that, and in fact, I'm not even convinced that we're not already too late, that without some form of a vigorous critique where I can have my neighbor become part of saying, wait a minute, high quality instructional materials, that's code for our school district and our school board is going to be forced to spend a lot of money on instructional materials of which the teachers and the families, they themselves will have no connection to because it will become mandated. And I'm going to point this out very clearly here in where I'm at in Ohio right now. The science of reading, whatever you think about it, it now has a preferred curriculum provider in the state of Ohio, and the teachers and teachers have to use it. Teacher education has to now use it. And the only person who can reap the benefits is a single curriculum provider in this sense. This is government-imposed monopoly. And on top of that, it's an imposition on indoctrination because it is absolutely a full violation of academic freedom, professional judgment, and the ability of teachers to do the work that we hired you to do as the professionals that you are. How's that?
Whoa. Yeah, well, you got it, Tim. Like, you got some feelings on that. What it just made me think about is I've already experienced this weirdness of going to my children's parent conferences and teachers like being mandated to talk about some high quality curriculum or test, and like literally having this weird exchange where it's like, again, I'm in the biz, so I'm like, I know they're kind of like required to be, but it's like you're talking about this weird thing. And so thank God, because I'm in the biz, I just quickly say, you know what? I don't want to hear about any of that. So chill. And let's just talk about my child, because really I want to know about how my child is doing in school. And to me, again, that's all the domains in my head, like socially, how are things going? Emotionally, what are you picking up on? What are strengths you're noticing about my kid? What do they seem to be into? You know, what are they doing well at? Where do they feel too challenged and resisted? And it actually is this huge. So parents, if you feel weird at conferences over that kind of stuff, that this is what it is. And this is what this person is advocating for, is more of that, more of this thing between us rather than just the direct connection between teacher and student. That's what I was dying to say, Johnny. What did you want to say?
No, it's good. I was just going to translate all that stuff, Tim, you're saying about this. And then Teacher Joanna so really nicely reminded us, like, for you, this is what it's like on the ground, both as an educator and a parent. All of that stuff, Tim, you read, is affluent disrespect.
Mm.
It's using words to be disrespectful. Instead of just coming out and being like, yo, we hate on teachers, we don't think they can do their job, we want to make some money, and we got some stuff that we're going to try and sell is really good. It might be good, it might not be good, but hey, we want you to buy it. And you need it because we disrespect on your teachers. Your teachers aren't good enough. That's my translation of all that. It's how kind of what it boils down to. I know it's important to be aware of it and have a critique of it, but it's why as teachers and even as parents, we're like, don't talk to me about the high quality instructional materials or name the test. Like, just how's my kid doing in class? Like, what kind of person are they? Are they enjoying it? I'm hearing about it at home. How are they in class doing? Let's talk on a human level, because I respect teachers as an educator, but also plenty of parents who aren't educators do that too, because they're on the ground in the real stuff. That other stuff is, to me, affluent disrespect to teachers. It's just using a bunch of words, maybe a degree or two at the end of it, and and dissing on teachers and kind of hiding behind it.
Yeah, they're hiding behind it. And I want to be clear, though, that like the whole like, I just want to know how my kid's doing isn't also just like, I think you're their babysitter and I just want to hear how they're doing. Like, there's a lot of complexity. And, you know, that's kind of like the magic or the real skill of teachers, is that it looks and it feels good. And it looks kind of maybe simple on the surface, but there's deep complexity to designing the learning experiences for students, for assessing where students are at. And like I said, knowing where to challenge and knowing where to push back and all of those things. So it's not just like, hey, I just want to know, is it nice in here? But there's real complexity to what teaching and learning actually is. And I keep saying that some of that high quality curriculum, the kind that this guy is writing about, actually does the opposite. It really gets in the way of all that complexity.
That's my point. The teacher, Allie, come on.
Well, I was going to say, you know, what Joanna's talking about is respecting, understanding the expertise that the teacher has. This entire article is about the deprofessionalization of teaching. You know, so you're stripping away the craft. You're stripping away the expertise of the teacher to be able to, I mean, like, I just can't comprehend. My brain cannot comprehend how people think it's a good idea for everybody in, like, let's say a first grade classroom, every first grade classroom, no matter where you are in any part of the state, any part of the nation, is all doing the exact same thing. I cannot comprehend how that doesn't equate to watering down curriculum, how it doesn't equate to children being miserable in school, and how it doesn't equate to teachers being like, why am I even going to college? Like, you could just hire Joe Schmo off the street to do this. You know, like,
Hallie, do you remember when this was really happening to people we worked with? When they were like, they were like, celebrating being like, they had people on the clock. They were like, at 9:07, Hallie was supposed to be doing this and she wasn't. And then the teacher was like, okay, because at 9:05, so-and-so peed their pants. And then this person was whatever. And but there was a time where, like,
yes.
So we've been through this. So that's one of the zombie ideas. And it was completely damaging, damaging on all kinds of fronts to those educators, for those children too, who were just like hurried along to be like, no, no matter what is going on in your life, we've got to be on this time frame. Like, super unhealthy.
Well, what's weird to me too in the article is I zoomed in on, like, he quotes three teachers, you know, so as, you know, as an educator, I'm like, okay, what are teachers saying? And like the three things they said was, one, they acknowledge that they give lip service to new initiatives because when they go back to their own classroom, they're in intellectual discourse through interactive lecture, you know? So he's like, this teacher's like, yeah, I just say, I smile and nod. I feel that way. Two, it talked about like how frustrated a teacher was because how they're like, people just come in and try to teach me how to teach reading and writing. Like, I don't know how, like, it's infuriating. Like, that's in this article. Mm-hmm. And then three, someone else saying that they're frustrated because they hear about something that they're like wrapping in shiny gift wrap and calling it new, but it's the same thing that's been done before. So I was like, so now we're gaslighting in this article? Like, I don't know, but I'm like, these are like real authentic comments from teachers that I have felt myself, that I hear colleagues say, and they used it in an article to be like, but no, 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 this is different.
But no, and this is where the challenge and the frightening part is because they openly call out the fact that teachers in the past have used their professional judgment to pocket veto reform efforts like this and go back to their classrooms and do what they know works. And here the implication is that it's not just high quality instructional materials that are going to be given to the teacher. It is going to be mandated that you do it, that you don't go back to your classroom and you veto this policy because, well, and here again, too, the reality is because it's about academic achievement and all these other countries that have high academic achievement. Well, no, let's go back to going, okay, if that is the one domain that we are concerned about, the countries with high academic achievement have addressed poverty, have addressed socioeconomic conditions, have addressed all the things that we've been saying for the last 40 years, going, hey, you want to deal with academic achievement? Let the kids have a nutritious lunch and the ability to have health care and their parents actually have the ability to make a living. Because in the countries with high academic achievement, which is absolutely totally different to our country, child poverty is somewhere between 10-11% and lower. Child poverty in America continues to be 25% and higher. I'm sorry. This, again, is cover for politicians to not do their jobs addressing the socioeconomic conditions that they've created. And in fact, will now use kids to continue saying things are failing and it will be mandated to be sold. This is government's crap. I sound like a conservative now, but this is government overreach trying to get involved. And it's a monopoly on the, it's a monopoly. Oh man, we got to call her. Call her Joanne from Madison. Help me out here.
I'm going to make things a little bit more complex. I'm going to point to the fact that those attendances that I've been hearing about so wonderfully from your group, those are being reflected in higher education as well. a number of classes. I know, again, a subject for another one of your episodes, but a number of classes, again, are structured so that adjuncts or teaching assistants can teach them very easily, structured off of textbooks. Dumbed down as much as possible so as to make it possible for somebody just to point at PowerPoints and get the results, whereas those beginning classes that are being mangled in those ways are very often the places where people learn whether or not they want to become mathematicians or become writers or become scholars of various sorts. They should be taught in the most energetic and imaginative ways by people who really love their fields and not individuals who are just being staged to produce.
Mm. Joanna, Johnny, you got something there.
Well, yeah, I'm just going to summarize a bit because I'm hearing some really great things and then caller Joanne, thanks for calling because you brought this again to the forefront. As I think for the people writing this kind of article or for the folks who are teacher proofing, and I put quotes mm-hmm. up around that. That's what it's called when we say like, well, the teacher's going to teach good teachers. I'm like, I'm going to nod when you go come to your presentation. I'm going to be like, yep. My principal's buying this crap probably, and then I'm going to teach how I want to teach. They are in every way trying to standardize things. And Teacher Hallie and Teacher Joanne talked about a time in their school, which is very real for a lot of educators around the country, where there's someone walking in the hall listening because at 9:07, we should mm-hmm. all be on page 5 of the curriculum. We should all be mm-hmm. doing, you know, call and response, reading sight words at this time. And so that's mm-hmm. a reality for far too many teachers. But what I want to bring it back to is what I think I hear every time Educators Amplified are here to remind us this, when we have legends, and I know he's a humble man, but I'll call him a legend. Martin Atkins last week on the show, reminding us that teaching is not one size fits all. It is not programmable. It is improvisational, but it's not anything goes. There's an artistry to it. If we believe that teacher is an art, it's a craft, it's a flow. Mm-hmm. It's a living ecology, like thinking of a classroom as a living garden, right? As a space where the energy is transferred around. There's teaching, there's learning, there's people who are not only taking in new information, but they're regulating their nervous systems and their bodies in the same space. There's all kinds of levels of learning, but there's an art.
Yeah, that's the point. We're always making it. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. 855-752-4842. Great calls, Joanne Madison. Thank you always for giving us a call. Hey, LA Tom's on the line too. We had to hold over the break because we know LA Tom's going to be dropping some knowledge on us. LA Tom, what's happening, our friend?
Hey, guys, first off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. The power lies within us. Get out, vote. This is not your normal election. This is an insane person running against an actual sane person. Second, Tim, I'm going to push back a little bit on the government overreach and how that kind of goes along with the Democratic side of the aisle. I look at the Democratic side of the aisle as providing a social safety net for people, and we bought into this fact that big government automatically means Democrats and not Republicans, and the Republicans are taking away a woman's right to choose and everything else under the sun when it comes to government, big government overreach. Third, the answers are not important. The questions are what's important, because questions only lead to more answers, which lead to more questions. So questioning things is what is knowledge and thirst for knowledge. And I think exactly what Johnny was talking about, you know, being that garden. And what's really, really interesting is the way that we're actually teaching the kids, it seems like, from what I'm understanding, is that it sounds like we're teaching them the same way corporate America wants everybody to be, which is basically just a cog in the wheel, a monkey that shows up for work and pushes a button. They don't want really great sales people actually giving one-on-one customer service and stuff to the customers. They want it so anybody can do the job. So if you leave or if you get fired or whatever it might be, oh, they got another one right in place there for you. And like you were saying, being on page five and at 9:07 a.m., you know, and it's really, really interesting. I think when you look at it from a more macro level and you look at it and go, wow, this is the way corporate America actually is trying to run things.
L.A. Tom, thank you so much, man, for the call and always call back to push back on me. That's what I'm here for, is to be pushed around. And you can see Teacher Hallie, Teacher Joanna, and Johnny always pushing me around too. So I'm used to it at this point. Now, you know what L.A. Tom's talking about here, though, and when I say, first of all, the government overreach, recognizing that on this issue, corporate education reform, and I like that Tom threw us back to remember it, the reason why they called it corporate ed reform is very much what he just said, is because it's this very monotonous cog in the wheel, the idea of saying everything's interchangeable. So corporate ed reform, and that's is what this is. But not, but it's, and it's painful. And Johnny, though, maybe this will, you feel like I'm always get caught up and broken down by this content or this topic. This to me is the epitome then of the attack on democracy, the attack on academic freedom, because the inability then of Teacher Joanna and Teacher Hallie and L.A. Tom as a community member to wonder about the what's happening in school, the idea that what's mandated at 9:07 on page 25, I guarantee you that when 9:07 and page 25 are mandated, that is an absolute attack on citizen democracy, participation, teaching and learning. And this to me is again, one more full frontal assault on democracy. That's how I'm seeing this. That's why I'm worried about it. And so I want my neighbor to go, you know what? It's probably not a good idea that every first grade teacher at 9:07 is currently in the same, you know, same, I was going to say something that probably would have came across wrong, in the same page number with the same kids. It's not reality, but that's an attack on democracy. That's a cog, and I get frightened by it. I don't know. That's where I'm at. But L.A. Tom, Teacher Hallie, Teacher Joanna, help me out.
Well, I would say if you ever look at something on the 74, it's not good.
So, there you go.
And so,
there you go. So if you want to talk about good music or what's innovative or changing things, and you turn on the radio and complain about there not being good music, I'm really going to come back to Martin Atkins, our post-punk guy, came on here and said this. Like, we're talking about doing something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think good teachers do that. They go against the grain because they know it's what's right. Teaching is relational. It's situational. They have to be able to be living and breathing with the children learning in the room of all ages. I'll even extend that into higher learning. Like, it's highly relational and situational. And we need to build, and we trust. That's what I loved what Teacher Joanna was saying earlier in the show. It's not that we're simplifying or dumbing it down for teachers or not caring. We trust their professional expertise. We trust that they have a craft, they have a knowledge of what it means to learn, and they're connecting with our children in a way to recognize something unique about that learner and to help them take that next step or move. It's really organic. And these articles and this, like, this pull to make it mechanized is to me a massive problem. That's why I love the post-punk thing. I'm still not even sure what post-punk is. But Martin said to us, he said, look, dude, they were telling us what music had to be. And we were like, no, we want to do it this way. We know this is what we're going to do. We want to feel it. We want to do it. And to me, that's what, like, that's why I like what he said. Post-punk is like education. I agree with him. Like, education is something different than schooling. We're talking about schooling and we're pulled into it. And then you have educators who are bold, courageous, and they have craft knowledge to where they're like, no, we're going to do this differently. It's why I want to hear from artists. And I include good teachers as artists.
Teacher Joanna is one of those artists.
Yes. I've always said that. Didn't I say that, Hallie? I would be like, I consider myself an artist. And so that's why staff meetings and the way things would be presented as a whole were such a turnoff to me. Cause I'm like, I'm an artist. Like, these guys are talking and they're, but to Tim's defense, like, this stuff has gotten a foothold because school board and many administration have bought into the quick solution. They have been effectively marketed to in many situations, and it is why it does exist in our spaces.
Mm-hmm. That's why we have a teacher exodus.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, come on. I'm sounding the alarm bells again. Educators Amplified, Teacher Hallie, Teacher Joanna. What a great Wednesday. This goes way too fast when you guys are in the room with us.
Busted. I think we need an hour episode coming up soon.
I think we do too. We're going to have to go back to long podcast.
Maybe get Martin back on. We do teacher artists.
Guess what, though? Tomorrow, artificial intelligence. Should teachers be using it? We have an expert coming in tomorrow. He's going to make the point that we shouldn't be. Uh-oh, Tim, you're in trouble.